Welcome to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. I'm Daniela, and this podcast is about my personal and also about a lot of other people's enthusiasm for art. Art can touch on all parts of life, and therefore we talk about all parts of life. I hope to get you on board and to tell you interesting stories you enjoy listening to.
This episode was recorded via the internet and on the road, so please excuse any glitches in sound quality. This is episode 85 of the Voices on Art podcast. I'm talking to Koen de Lare, a Tilburg-based painter and professor, who will be opening his fourth show at Van Horn together with Elisabeth Vary on January 20. So let's see how we go from here.
Hi, Koen. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Daniela. Thanks for having me.
As always, we're starting from the very beginning. The exhibition we are going to open on the 20th, the title is Just Kids. And so how can I imagine the kid, Koen de Lare? Where were you at as a kid and how did art touch your life?
I think as a kid, how do you explain yourself as a kid? I think I was a very dreamy kid, always drawing, always making something, always drawing or listening to music.
And did that come from your own impulse or was there something else in the family that supported you with that?
No, really my own impulse. Nobody in my family was drawing or interested in art or interested in music even. They were all really into sports and I wasn't. No.
So you were a kind of outsider in the family?
Yeah.
And was that good or bad?
I don't know. I was always keen on inventing stuff for myself to do.
And how was it at school then? Did you continue with that? And were there any teachers or so that saw that you had a certain talent?
That only happened in high school. Yeah, before that, they just thought I was unconcentrated or uninterested or not even good at learning. But that wasn't the case. I was just not interested in school. I was just interested in using my imagination.
That happens often with talented kids, that they're kind of like underestimated, that people think they're stupid just because they're interested in different things.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I really hated school for that.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah. I was always so bored or, I don't know, like misunderstood.
It was not so easy at school, but did you find friends that had the same interest? Or were you just sort of like doing your stuff, making things and drawing and all these things by yourself?
Yeah, and at a certain point, everybody knows that you can draw pretty well. So They ask you to draw something for them. So I think also at an early age, I was doing all kinds of like little assignments or doing something for the school paper or making invites, T-shirts. There was also in Holland, the carnival. Yeah, you have that in Düsseldorf, of course. So I was also a little involved in that, like decorating these big trucks with all the figures on it. And I was doing comics, like small comic strips.
About what?
When I was really young, I think about pirates. Like
Yeah, sure.
The usual stuff. Pirates and cowboys. But I was also interested in the story, but how to make it challenging. Like combinations of stuff, like a football team attack the pirates or something. I was really into like trying to think of really challenging stuff to draw. Something difficult. Give me something difficult to make.
That was technical that you say, well, the harder I have a time to draw it, the better?
Yeah, or if I don't know how to do it, then it's more interesting instead of copying existing things.
Oh, so you started already inventing.
Yeah, and then to get back to your question also, like what was the first time you saw art? I think was going to Time Life magazines, trying to find stuff to draw. And then I remember that there were like images of paintings, like these realist American landscape paintings or something. I remember I found that interesting and I started copying those in paint. Paint I found in the garage, like house paints. And like at a really early age, I was also painting stuff.
That sounds like a almost old-fashioned artist starting. You know, somebody who really completely comes from his own inner need to invent something.
Yes, I guess. And you were asking about my friends. I had some friends who did similar stuff, but not with drawing or art or stuff. Like they were more like, how does a moped work? Or can I adjust this or make a telescope? Yeah, so I had some friends who were also like really autonomous, like let's make a canoe or something.
And as a teenager, I guess latest as a teenager, music came into play.
Yeah. Well, music came, I think, like when I was 13 or 14.
And what did that do to you, with you?
I was completely into it, like rock music. I think the first album I bought or got maybe for my birthday or something was the Rolling Stones, and then Led Zeppelin, and then very soon punk came. Like all my friends were into heavy metal, or they had older brothers who were into heavy metal. And then I discovered like punk music. Yeah, that blew me away. That was really the energy, or also the artworks of it, the sleeves, the whole thing appealed to me.
I know that music still plays a role in your practice, at least by listening to it and by moving in the studio when painting. But it's a long way from being a teenager, being into music, being into drawing or painting or discovering art, and then to decide, I'm going to be an artist. When did you know that you would go that way?
Well, like actually being an artist, I think rather late, but making stuff was really early. And then also like through the punk thing, I could also do like posters for bands playing in local venues. I was getting really into that, like designing flyers for bands. And of course, I knew Black Flag and Raymond Pettibon. And then I think it's also because of Sonic Youth, I discovered, because Sonic Youth had all these covers done by artists like Richard Kern, and then later also Gerhard Richter. And it kind of opened up a lot of stuff. And I could get involved in organizing, like also organizing shows for bands at local venues. And then I also played in a band.
What did you play?
Oh, I couldn't do anything. I'm completely useless in music.
Yes, but it's punk. You didn't have to know anything. The great thing with punk was that just do it. It was never, can you do it? You have to learn. Hey, just do it. Do it yourself. That was the right thing about punk.
Yeah. So we did, I don't know, like tape loops, and I was singing.
I was singing once. Mm.
Yeah, and it all kind of opened up from there. But I never thought about, am I being an artist or something? I never thought about terming it like that. It was more like functioning in a kind of social context.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To me, it sounds very, it has a certain freedom, you know, that you don't have to label yourself. You don't have to define yourself. You're just in a scene. You're with punks and with music organizing shows and drawing flyers or whatever, or fanzines, whatever you did at that time, and t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's like at one point, probably you have to finish school. Probably you have to study, you know, you grow up. What happened then? What happened when the kid grew up?
Mm-hmm. I also remember, because I grew up in Zeeland, in Zeeuws-Vlaanderen. That's in Holland, near the Belgian border, near Antwerp, near Ghent. And there also was not a lot of stuff to do. So there was this small scene, but at a certain point, it also felt like really restricted. When I was 17, 18, a lot of people were also involved in drugs. And that became also like a really narrow path to follow. And also the punk thing was also really kind of restricted. Huh? The music should be fast and aggressive.
No, there was no variety. It had to be just one thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I also had this really strong feeling I needed to leave or had to get out. And then some older people I knew went to art school. And then I heard what they were doing. Like somebody was studying something like designing playgrounds for kids. And somebody else started a silkscreen studio. And I also found that really interesting. Like, you could do more than
just being high.
Just being, you know,
like, or drunk.
Just be in this local scene. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I went to the academy because some friends moved to Tilburg also, and it was near Eindhoven, and I knew some people in Eindhoven. And in Eindhoven, there was a good music scene or squat scene, which I was interested in, and I knew some people there, and some people who were into theater and making movies themselves. And there was also this connection to Berlin.
What time are we talking about? Like the 90s?
Yeah, so this is early 90s.
So it was more or less you kind of like just followed a wave of people you knew, and it was just like the logical thing for you to go to art school. But you have to apply and you might have to pass a test. How did that go?
Yeah, I was in right away.
Okay. What did you apply with?
I had a bunch of paintings I did with car paint. And I had drawings after life also, a lot of drawings. And I had a lot of photographs. And I also applied for art school. I was thinking, well, yeah, you know, like a kid, they're not going to teach you to be an artist. What do you want to learn? So I thought, why not photography? That seemed like something I could do, or something which you could have a profession in, or something which could also be always like useful or something. So that was my motivation, I guess. And I thought, well, the painting I can discover myself or something. Yeah.
So you went to a photography class?
Yeah. And I also did a course in art education. I think like for 2 years I did art education, photography, still life, drawing. And then at a certain point I switched completely and I did painting and philosophy.
And then I guess, I mean, I don't know if it's true, but I figured then because your drawings, probably your paintings until then, photography is all figurative, or you draw from real life, as you said, or from photos probably.
Yeah. And I had a problem with my drawings also, that it was kind of hard to shake off a certain style. Like they were too like Robert Crumb.
Which is not bad, but I can understand you don't want to do the same thing. Yeah, sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think at a certain point, you kind of condition yourself to work a certain way, like it's all wrist movements and small, elaborate shadowing and stuff like that. And I thought, this is not going anywhere. And then, yeah, painting was like some new territory for me to really explore, or to really step into something which was completely new for me.
So it was an adventure for you yourself. You were stepping into unknown fields.
Yeah.
Was it abstract from the beginning? Because I only know you as an abstract painter. So now I hear that there's a long path that led up to this.
Yeah.
How did you fall into abstraction?
Well, I painted figuratively, but I was really trying to do the whole spectrum. So I was making text paintings. I was making monochromes, I was doing figurative painting, and I did it because the cheapest way was to do it on wood. So I was painting all this stuff on wooden panels. I remember for practical reasons, I had to cut up some paintings to transport them.
Yeah.
Because they're wood, they could also be like building blocks. So I had all these different style paintings, which I could make like one big painting with, like a whole wall.
Like a Lego game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I made these like really big wooden freestanding walls, like divisions in space of these paintings, which were also like more installative, or in that time, expanded painting was also something which was happening at that time, I guess. And I graduated with a big spatial installation of these wooden constructions. And I also found it interesting to make these kind of big wooden environments. I needed help also to build, so I could also involve friends of mine. So it also became like collaborative, and because they became like spaces, I could also have music or bands performing in these spaces. When I graduated, that was like what I was totally into, like make a big painterly environment and then have it, do it collaboratively and have, you know, like all sorts of stuff involved. I was quite successful with it immediately.
What does success mean in that regard?
Yeah, I got a grant from the DuPont Museum.
Wow.
And a studio, like a studio for free and a house for free from the DuPont Museum for a year. I got asked to do exhibitions in galleries and also in big like semi-institutions like W139 in Amsterdam, Von Zwelters in Amsterdam wanted a show. Yeah, all of a sudden had a really like filled agenda.
Usually that's the hardest part. Well, the first hard part is to get into an art school. If you are accepted, then usually it's a great time to explore, to find out where you want to go, to meet all your colleagues, the other artists and students. And then when you drop out of art school, then usually you fall into reality, which can be the hardest part because what you're doing at art school is not necessarily what you will be doing later. So for you, it was kind of like a soft jump because people already wanted your work.
Yeah. But then I still wasn't completely convinced of of pursuing this.
I never thought about it that way, but is it that doubt is a very important feature of yours?
Yeah.
To doubt things?
Probably, yeah, sure. At that point, I didn't see it as something to take too seriously also.
How old were you then?
When I graduated, I was 25. But I was also not so good informed. I mean, it was something, just something you did. And I wasn't so like informed about the art world or about the possibilities. There were certain invites I found interesting and other stuff not. And I also remember for my first gallery show, when they came to collect the paintings, I had overpainted them all. It was never in my mind that they wanted the paintings they selected or something. So I guess also in the first couple of years, I've also burned a lot of bridges. I also remember a lot of arguments also about my practice. I was also still doing other stuff besides that. I was still doing collaborative works like videos and performances and sound stuff. So I thought it was also kind of restricting like the art thing, you know. They just invited me to make these big installations, and I thought it's just like one aspect of what I do. Yeah, there was already in my mind like an escape route out of it or something.
Yeah, on one hand, it's really good to be versatile and to be multifaceted. On the other hand, sometimes it's better to be focused, especially if you really work as an artist. Then, yeah, you have to take it serious. You can take it with lightness, but you have to take it serious also because it's a real profession in the deepest sense, I think. And I know that you know that, but when did you figure that out?
Yeah, I really had to figure it out myself, but it's also because doing these shows.
Learning by doing.
Yeah, I went to Berlin a lot, but I also met a lot of people, artists my age or a little older, who were taking it seriously and who apparently also saw like a big potential in my work. They were also giving me hell, like you should take it seriously. You have this shot at it. I don't know if that was the conscious decision, but at a certain point, yeah. I also remember like in the press, these articles about my shows or about my work that I felt like misinterpreted and that I should change something.
Why? What did they say?
They said that the work was like this expressive thing, this expressionistic, like a bomb exploding. I even remember like there was this photographer who came to photograph me in the studio. If I could pose like with an axe or a chainsaw or something.
Okay.
I thought completely misrepresented or something.
But could you understand why they would see your work like that?
Well, at least I thought I need to change something. If it's read like that, then I should, you know, I should deal with it in a way that perspective changes.
So we're still talking about the wooden blocks.
Yeah.
So that's the chainsaw association.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that they're really also really big. Like sometimes like in W139, I don't know how high the ceiling is there, but I think it's like 6 or 8 meters or something. And then by 12 meters. And then you also get invited in shows with people who make rougher installative works or something. And then I remember somebody saying to me, why don't you just make a normal painting? And I thought, yeah, maybe.
Like a normal painting.
Like what's a normal painting?
Yeah, what's a normal painting? That would be my question as well. What's a normal painting? Well, a normal painting probably is kind of like confined to the four limitations like of a rectangular canvas.
Exactly, yeah. Like do it on linen.
And you did that. I know you did it, but you did that.
Well, I did that, but I didn't show them right away. I think I kind of worked on those things like maybe for 2 years or something, like trying to develop something. And at the meantime, I was doing like videos and all kinds of stuff.
But Koen, after all these things, you definitely wanted to create something. You want to create something since you were a child.
Yep.
But you didn't know exactly what to create or how to create, or what was it, what was so necessary that it had to come out of you? And why was the forms you found for that expression, why were the forms so unsatisfactory until now? And did you find a form that was more satisfactory to you, which expresses more what you really are? Did you find it until now? Are you still searching?
No, I kind of found something, I guess. Well, you're always searching.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things which opened a lot up was to discover that there can also be content in form, like the form itself.
Mm-hmm. That it does not have to be a figure or a story or something.
Yeah, or that a material or the handling of a material, that can contain like content already, like the way you do it.
Mm-hmm.
The way you handle, that it's not necessarily about the idea, but more like the execution of it. I think that was the real thing I discovered around that time. And also with these, like making these, you know, quote unquote, normal paintings. Also that came through friends, like other artists discussing literature. I remember like getting really into literature, like Ballard and Coetzee, and that there's also like this, how they write, or even with Coetzee, like for every book, for every novel he writes, he has this kind of really distinct kind of way how he writes. I found that really interesting. Yeah, like new, or that was something I never learned. And that opened a lot, yeah, like a lot of possibility. If you kind of step really into like how to paint instead of like what to paint, or how to work, or what are the conditions where you want to work in. I think that was a really important step.
And also how to apply the body, because I think with this now, the body comes into play very strongly, the body of the artist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All those, like your body movement or your temperament or the way you make decisions, you can apply all kind of consequences to that, like also the size of the paintings or the what kind of materials you want to use. And I find that kind of stuff extremely interesting, and it totally opened up my praxis and also how I understood art, I think, at that time. And then that decision also kind of became fruitful in a sense. I was also kind of lucky with that, I guess.
Fruitful is because of production or because of exhibitions? Opportunity.
Opportunities to show the works, to discuss the works, to have it in a discourse. Yeah. And I started working with a gallery at that time also, who gave me complete autonomy on what I wanted to do in the gallery space or what I wanted to show on art fairs. That was also something really new for me, that it's like your decision, do what you want.
The artist's decision.
Yeah. Instead of having all these discussions all the time about show this or show that. At that moment in time, that was really good for me. I kind of also valued the art world more like a place of freedom also.
Which it can be potentially. The art world potentially can be a place of freedom.
Yeah.
But it also can be a place of restriction.
I think before that, I maybe saw it also like a marketplace, you know, like some commodities.
It has so many facets. That's, I think, is fascinating, because we all belong to that world. It's not a different world where you are in, or I am in, or other people, the museums, we're all in the same space, probably at different places in the same space, but it's still the same space. We're in there together. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to discover that.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to find your peers, mm-hmm. or find people you can work with, or even mm-hmm. communicate with. I mean, there's so many layers in this, and it's also, you know, depends on who you talk with. Yeah.
Yeah. And some things you have to invent yourself, you know?
Also. Yeah.
There's some paths probably that haven't been threaded yet, and you just have to invent it.
Yeah.
You can go there, you can go there.
And discover it also for yourself, or potentialize,
mm-hmm.
or
exactly.
Like your potential, like not
somebody else's.
Yeah, or what's projected on you or what's expected, maybe. I don't know.
So you're still on your individual path, finding out how your way is going as now as an artist and painter. And do you feel that your paintings are now interpreted in a way that is suiting you better? Do you feel that people are more understanding of your work now than it was before?
Yes, I think so. And on the other hand, maybe bothered less, you know. I can also see the open interpretation of it or the value in that. I also don't want it to be like totally didactical. You know, it's only this thing. It can be a range of things. But I think people like kind of also respond to it, that it's this physical thing, that it's, yeah, both those things.
There are certain things I'm always sort of like envisioning when I'm thinking of you, you know. One thing we were just talking about, you were talking about that you always try to overcome restrictions. And I think if you have overcome one limitation, the next comes around the corner.
Yeah.
So you're still kind of like fighting with this or working on that, that you become more free in your work?
I think there's also, let me think, like, yeah, well, if you find a solution for one thing, then something else will be not necessarily a problem. Like if you kind of solve how to paint, this question, how to paint, like how it started, then color isn't really like an issue. But as soon as you kind of discover how to paint or you found this solution to it, then maybe color becomes also interesting or a topic. So my point being, like, it kind of expands all the time. Also in the material side or in the pictorial side. Yeah, like when you solve the painting performance, then you kind of find interesting, like, how does it work pictorially? I don't know, like juxtapositions are kind of new insights or new fields of interest. You know, like at a certain point, you try to make a paint which suits your praxis, and then you start making paint yourself, and then you step into this world of pigments, and, you know, it kind of continuously opens up other areas which you weren't interested in before or aware of before. I think it kind of expands also and kind of contracts and expands, if that makes sense. Like some stuff becomes narrower and other things become broader. And I think that kind of happens all the time.
Let's jump to the present day. How can I imagine, like, for example, the show Just Kids opening next Saturday on the 20th. You did all new works for that. How can I imagine when you know it, not necessarily this show, but when a show is coming up, you're painting, you're in the studio physically. What's the process? How can I imagine Kuhn being in the studio working on his works? What's happening?
Well, I think a big change in recent years is that before I always saw like a show, like a project, like something I can do, like make all the works in 6 weeks or something, or make them in 4 weeks, or kind of like really pressure yourself to make this group of works all in this one concentrated flow. I think the show now will be like works, like a selection of works I made over the year, like take a way longer time to work on them or overpaint them, or not just this one flow. I think that's a big difference. I think it became slower. It became also more intense or more layered, and also more open to the pictorial element, that they're not so restricted in composition, maybe. Yeah.
So less composition, more freedom.
Yeah, way more specific in the use of materials.
And also color.
Yeah, yeah.
More precise or more like just letting it go?
Yeah, that's a hard question. More specific, I think, in all aspects. I don't know. If they're let go, then they're completely let go. And if they need to be precise, then they're more precise. Yeah. Like also in the process, I work with oil-based paints and with water-based paints at the same time, like wet on wet. For every paint, I need a really specific pigments also. So I'm kind of also really into this material aspect more of the works, and how they dry or how they react on each other or how I can manipulate that. Yeah, I think they're way more experimental than, let's say, 4 years ago.
Oh, cool. Interesting. That's your own research. That's kind of like the thing you did probably your whole life, finding out how things work. Then there has to be the mediating towards the audience. Do you ever think of the audience, or how do you want them to communicate to your audience?
Oh.
What do you wish that people react to? Yeah, it's that's a hard question, but still, it's a hard question. But if you do exhibitions, there hopefully will be an audience.
For myself, I try to reference them sometimes to like really specific places or really specific events. And hopefully also the audience kind of reacts on it, like that you can reference it in a certain way, like to a live event or like a, let me search a little, because it's English, eh? And I have to translate everything in my head. I don't know. I think there's probably also a directness in the work, which is appealing. And you think like, this is kind of made in a certain moment or a certain mood. Hopefully I get something across like that. Like it's not a completely cognitive thought out process, but it's also something direct or physical.
Energetic.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, the moment, like the mood or the music you're listening to, the movement you're making, all of that, which is happening in the studio while you bring material and color on the canvas. Still, at some point, you decide, now this painting is finished. You know, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it to an exhibition. So that moment, that mood, whatever, that's kind of like captivated in time. And it's going to be there, hopefully, for a couple of decades or centuries.
Yeah.
You know, so on one hand, you're referencing it probably just to a certain moment, but that moment might be eternity, or at least much, much longer than only that moment. Do you ever think of that?
Yeah. You don't want them to be anecdotal, huh? It's weird, huh? It's the most difficult thing to talk about.
I know, it's so hard to talk about art. I'm so aware that, especially artists, because they do their work in the studio, you know, your language is the painting. It's not words, you know? So it's like words don't come easy.
I think it has to do with this kind of like this physical experience. Like you try to get across like an, not necessarily extreme, but like an intense physical experience. I think for my work, I try to tap into that, like really have it be about that. Like, let's say like the first time you swam in the ocean, you kind of feel that it's something different than swimming in the sea or swimming in a pool. It doesn't make sense because, like, you know, the water around your body or something, it doesn't make sense to have this kind of distinction between ocean or sea or something, but you kind of feel it. Yeah. And it's hard to explain, like in language or something, like what it is, but you can sense it. And I think you can also try to communicate about that. Or the first time you were at a live band and the music starts and immediately your body starts to dance, you know. We're not thinking about dancing or something, you kind of start immediately, like your hip starts to move or your head starts to shake. Yeah, so I think it's about moments like that, kind of universal, like everybody has those experiences.
Mm-hmm. As long as we're humans in a human body.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's the experience. So it's kind of necessary, although we have all these digital means. But it's kind of necessary that real people in real bodies experience your real works in a real space.
Yeah, exactly. And instead of rationalizing it, try to experience it. Yeah.
That's quite a step. I think it's so much less vulnerable, and most people, I think, feel more safe to experience things from their head, to judge things or think about them and to experience them physically. Not necessarily only cognitive or probably even emotionally, energetically, that requires a certain kind of openness.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. There's also something with thinking and language, which makes it kind of hard sometimes. We have this almost like an automatism to choose the cognitive, or even also the time, you know, the time we live in with computers and, you know, screens, etc. Lydia Yuknovich, this writer, she writes about that there was a time in your life that you didn't use language, but you still had consciousness. Like when you were really young, you know, you were conscious, or the consciousness was starting, but you didn't use language yet. And she tries to make a point with her novels about how important that is, that there's also this thinking body or something.
Yeah, it's like they found out that, for example, that our colon is like a second brain.
Mm-hmm.
our organs and other organs than the brain have kind of like their own consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, that everything is connected and we're not just those brainy people. We are the full body people.
Yeah, exactly. And I think painting, which is such a physical activity, or can be, at least how I do it, it's something you do with your whole body. And it's also, I wouldn't say my brain isn't working when I'm doing it, but, you know, it's kind of...
But you're in the flow, probably, you know?
Yeah. Flow is also a hard term, I think, because it kind of also suggests that it's kind of like this Dionysian thing.
That's not my association, I have to say. When I think of flow, it means that you're not so much restricted by yourself, your mind, your ego, you know, that you kind of get, what I don't like is the term is getting lost in the present moment.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Because I think you become more present in the present moment.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, you're not lost at all.
But something inside of you, which is probably your ego connected with a mental faculty, steps aside and you just can be there and do whatever has to be done.
Exactly. Yeah. Like dancing.
Yes, like dancing.
So I think the music reference still plays a big deal, trying to also get into this kind of conscious thing about that you're this body reacting to all kinds of sensations. Yeah. In that sense, it's also, I think, pretty classical, no? What I do.
Oh, yeah, sure, because human beings have been in human bodies for quite a while.
Yeah.
And we still are, despite all the technology and development. And I think, you know, since ages, people say, oh, painting is dead, or the physical activity becomes less and less important. I mean, we're all going to the fitness studio, but we don't feel our bodies. And
yeah.
We're not really living in our bodies, you know. We're kind of like treating our bodies as something to be optimized.
Yeah.
But the real wonder of the capacities the body has, I think we didn't even tap into that. So one question, if somebody paints, especially paints like you, abstract and with the physical aspects in the forefront, is, oh, isn't that kind of like old-fashioned? Is that still necessary? What would be your strong point to say, oh, yes, exactly, this kind of painting is super necessary?
I think even more and more.
Even more, exactly.
Because everything feels so distant or so cognitive or so rationalized or so, yeah, like even let's not talk about politics.
I mean, politics is made by people in bodies, you know, and everybody always kind of like behaves as if that wouldn't be the case, as if their emotions or their physical dispositions wouldn't matter because all is so rational.
Yeah.
But fuck no, it is not. You know, we're all sitting, you know, in the bodies, and it kind of more or less rules how we feel, how we think, what we do.
And it's forgotten so easily. Like even in art history, when you read something, let's say Cézanne, he painted the Mount Saint-Victoire, what, a couple of hundred times, maybe 100 times or something. And it's always about how he discovered modernism, like how he created this stepping stone for abstraction. And it's never talked about that he was walking there in the field, you know, with the sun on his body, maybe smelling lavender, being in that place or something. And I think if you look at the paintings, it's way more about that than about this guy discovering modernism or something.
And the funny thing is, especially with painting, is that, you know, if you look at paintings, it doesn't matter how young or old they are, the brush stroke, the making of the painting is always now.
Yeah.
You know, you still see the same brush stroke you saw 500 years ago.
Yeah, and you can relate to it directly with your body. I mean, it's the same size or it's the same movement. You can even mimic it with your hand or with your arm or with your shoulder. Yeah.
So painting is kind of like a time machine.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true for a lot of, you know, like also like for ceramics, for instance. Huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, everything which is made with the body and the hand.
Or has this material faculty that it can store this body movement or touch.
Oh, yeah, material as storage. We had kind of like the idea that it would be a duo show.
Mm-hmm.
So we invited Elisabeth Wari for this show, opening next week. How do you think those works relate to each other, because I think they're both concerned exactly with what we were talking about, the bodily experiences.
Yeah, I'm really curious also how they will function also together, like objects within the context of what you just talked about, like the storage or of physical information, but also like color is also a form of information. I think also with Elizabeth's work that color is like really important. She has completely different color language or color sense than my works. Yeah, I'm kind of really curious how they will behave.
Yes, how they will behave.
You know, yeah. if they're in competition with each other or dialogue or ignore each other. I don't know. Yeah, you have to see them in the space also together. Huh?
Yes. For me, it's like in my mind, it's kind of like a perfect and non-perfect match, mm-hmm. you know, for so many reasons, like the bodily aspects of each painting object, male, female, old, younger, you know, all these things. But in the space, I really don't know how to install them yet.
And her work is quite new for me. I think I discovered her work maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago, something. So it's completely fresh also for me. Yeah.
Yeah, same for me. And she's 84.
So like a real fresh discovery, which I'm really looking forward to. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything you're especially looking forward to? Not necessarily just in regard to that show, but we're just starting the year 2024. So what's going on? What do you wish?
What do I wish? Like a completely different political climate, that for starters. But for myself, I just started a research period. I got a fund from the Mondrian funds to research more in this kind of physical, bodily, how I move. Yeah, that's really what I'm going to step into. And I'm going to, you know, work together also with some artists who are more into performance and some people who are really into music. Yeah, let's say a research and development period for me.
So it's kind of like full circle in a way.
Yeah, like everything falls into its place at the moment.
So, Koen, see you next week. And thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Please find links and a text about my guest in the show notes. For more information on Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast, follow us on Instagram at Voices on Art and at van_horn_Düsseldorf. Visit our website van-horn.net and subscribe to Voices on Art on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the platform of your choice. Thank you for listening to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. Stay tuned and connect.